The following episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast deals with serious and sensitive topics. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome to Lyrics of Their Life, The Story Behind, the podcast where we uncover the true stories behind the songs you know and love. I'm your host, Adam Hampton, and in this episode, we're exploring the story behind a song well-renowned as one of the greatest of all time, none other than In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins. Picture this, a dark bridge at midnight, a man drowning in the water below, and another man standing on the shore, close enough to help, but choosing to do, well, nothing. For over 40 years, this haunting urban legend has followed Phil Collins throughout his career, as rumours circulated that In the Air Tonight was inspired by an event where Phil saw the whole incident play out from a distance, before inviting the willing bystander to one of his concerts just to shine a spotlight on him and sing those chilling words, "Well, if you told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand." It's a perfect story. In fact, it's legendary. The only problem is, it's a total lie. For many years, the true meaning behind the song has actually been misunderstood. There was no actual drowning man per se. Instead, the drowning man was Phil Collins, who wrote the song about his failing marriage to his then wife Andrea while he was away on tour, and the bitterness, sadness and anger he felt towards her when she had an affair with another man and moved their children with her halfway across the world to Canada. So, how did a spontaneous, anger-fueled freestyle in Phil's makeshift bedroom studio become the most famous drum break in history and one of the greatest songs of all time? How did the urban legend behind the song begin, and how does it stack up today in modern pop culture? So, let's take a closer look at the story behind the song and how it became etched into music history. This is the story of In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins. This is Lyrics of Their Life.
Prince has died at the age of 57.
This is it.
Sorry, Gary, but I was always the talented member of the band.
Keep booing, little girl. I will hit a man with glasses.
I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
Former Beatle John Lennon, who was 40, was shot and killed last night outside his luxury apartment in New York.
Asbeens shouldn't present fucking awards to Gunna Be.
Leave Britney alone!
After first picking up a pair of drumsticks at the age of 3 and making a racket around the family home as a toddler by banging on his toy drum, middle-class boy Phil Collins would rise from drama school theatre performer and actor, starring as a 14-year-old in the West End musical Oliver as the Artful Dodger, to playing in multiple bands across the London music scene as a talented up-and-coming drummer. Then, when Phil noticed an advertisement in Melody Maker magazine searching for a new drummer to join the art rock band Genesis, he jumped at the opportunity, replacing John Mayhew on drums and joining quirky lead singer Peter Gabriel, keyboard and piano player Tony Banks, Mike Rutherford on bass, and yet another new member in Steve Hackett on guitar. Up to this point, Genesis had released 2 studio albums and had begun to build a cult following, but hadn't yet had much success commercially. However, by the time Phil joined on drums, by each and every new album, the band got bigger and bigger, scoring 2 top 10 UK albums in 73 and 74, and by the mid-70s, Genesis were now a renowned English rock band, known best for their strange but charismatic frontman, Peter Gabriel, who drew in audiences with his quirky costumes, ranging from fox heads and flower pots, while he was also known for his edgy lyrics and vocal style. With his performative art style, this was something that rubbed his fellow bandmates up the wrong way at times, and with Gabriel getting all the love and admiration, and all the focus being on his costumes rather than the music itself, tensions started to grow within the band. By the end of 1974, Peter Gabriel had had enough, and after the arrival of his first child, named Anne Marie, and her early health problems, Gabriel realised his family were much more important than the band. By the end of the 1975 Genesis tour, during May, Gabriel left the band, leaving a large hole that would not be easy to fill, as he would later, of course, go on to have commercial success as a solo artist with hits like Sledgehammer and In Your Eyes. Fearing this was the end of Genesis, and with the press predicting they were finished, the remaining Genesis members held auditions for new lead singers, and after realising that none of the 100 potentials were any good, they realised Phil Collins was their man. Genesis, from here, would move forward as a four-piece, with Phil on vocals and drums simultaneously, and they never looked back, with Phil's incredible vocal ability helping the band go from cult band status to commercial pop sensations, something that rubs some of the original Genesis fanbase up the wrong way, with Phil taking much of the heat and criticism for the band's new pop direction, even though Phil helped the band reach number 3 with Trick of the Tail and 7 with Wind and Wuthering on the UK albums chart. It was during this time in 1975 when Phil, now aged 24, would marry his childhood girlfriend from Surrey named Andrea Bertarelli, who was also 24 years of age. The pair first met one another back when they were 11 years old at a London-based drama school. According to Phil, in his autobiography Not Dead Yet, they were dating as teenagers and Phil would often stay over at Andrea's house. However, when Andrea's father passed away, her mother soon remarried with a Canadian Air Force officer and relocated Andrea and their family to Vancouver, Canada, prematurely ending their teenage romance. Now as adults, in 1974 when Genesis toured Vancouver, the long-lost couple would meet up for dinner at Andrea's house, only to learn that she had repartnered. This didn't deter Phil, however, as Andrea and Phil's connection was undeniable, and after their catch-up, they stayed in contact via telephone while Genesis continued to tour, until eventually their love was undeniable and they decided to rekindle their relationship. Andrea was an aspiring actress and dancer and already had a 16-month-old daughter named Jolie to a previous relationship, with Phil taking the stepdad role in his stride and going on to raise her like his own and even becoming her legally adoptive father, as Jolie's biological father was no longer in the picture. Despite Phil being a busy man touring with Genesis, things started off well, as Andrea and Jolie uprooted their whole life in Canada to move back to the UK with Phil, settling briefly in his one-bedroom apartment before realising that they'd need something bigger. So together, they moved to a house in Headley Grange. However, stress and frustration in the relationship started to build when they realised the house was rat-infested, and making matters worse, Phil was away much of the time, either on tour or recording the album A Trick of the Tail. Phil claimed in his autobiography Not Dead Yet that he didn't mind, as he was hardly there, but he felt bad for Jolie and Andrea, who had to deal with the filthy rat-infested state of that house. As cracks started to form in their relationship, in 1976, Andrea and Phil had their first child together, naming their son Simon Collins. However, Phil only just made it in time to witness the birth of his son Simon, and within just 2 days, he had no choice but to rejoin Genesis on the road, which of course frustrated and hurt Andrea, who was left with young Jolie and a newborn just days after giving birth. Together, the family of four would relocate to a better house over on Queen Anne's Grove. However, this only temporarily relieved some strain on their relationship, as Andrea grew tired of Phil's loyalty to the band over them as a family. And with Phil becoming the lead singer of Genesis, there was now added pressure on his shoulders, as the band also grew in popularity, and Phil had no idea how to balance out the consuming beast of a booming band and his home life. The live shows were also getting bigger and bigger, including laser shows and lighting effects. The crowds were growing in size to over 150,000 people in Brazil alone, and the band simply became everything to Phil. The 1977 Wind and Wuthering Tour would be the straw that started to break the camel's back, as Phil would tour with Genesis on 3 back-to-back-to-back legs of America, 2 back-to-back legs of Europe, and would end with a leg in Japan. Phil's marriage to Andrea started to implode in between this tour, as he was touring relentlessly and was hardly ever home, with Phil's explanation simply being, "This is my job, and you know what you signed up for." However, Andrea didn't see it that way. In order to attempt to repair their marriage, they would move to a new country house in Shelford, Surrey, England, known as Oldcroft. However, this was just a band-aid solution. When Phil returned home on brief breaks from touring, tensions had become so high that the kids even started to pick up on their disdain for one another, while Phil claimed that they loved each other still, but they just didn't like one another. As he claimed in his autobiography, that little to no small talk occurred between the two during this time. Phil did feel sorry for her being left alone with the kids and pets while he's off touring and seeing the world. However, he didn't feel he had a choice. As touring was his job, he wanted to be the provider and the breadwinner, and he had to pay the mortgage somehow for their new house, as royalties had only just started trickling in, as he had only just begun to write songs for Genesis over a year ago. According to Phil, however, Andrea was believed to have said, "If you go on this tour, I won't be here when you get back." He would later state in his autobiography that he would regret not telling the band that he couldn't continue. However, perhaps we would have never got the Phil Collins solo era, and of course, In the Air Tonight. With their marriage on the rocks, and despite the clear warnings that Andrea was unhappy, Phil continued on as part of Genesis in 1978, releasing the smash hit UK number 3 album, And Then There Were Three, aptly named after guitarist Steve Hackett had departed the band as he wanted to pursue his own solo career. The album produced their biggest hit to date, with Follow You, Follow Me reaching number 7 in the UK and helped them break into the US market. This led to the band touring the world and North America extensively once again, putting further pressure on Phil's marriage. It was while away on tour that Andrea sought the company of a painter and interior decorator named Michael Burberry, who was renovating their country home in Surrey at the time that Phil was away on tour. With Andrea later admitting that it was mostly a brief, emotional affair, as she felt neglected by Phil, and that it was a, quote, deep-seated emotional need, and that Burberry provided, quote, empathy and support. The affair, according to Andrea, would last just a few weeks before she ended things, despite remaining friendly. However, it was clear she wasn't getting what she needed from Phil anymore, as she longed for his connection and emotional support, stuck at home with young children and their pets while he toured. While away on tour, Phil recalls learning about the affair over the phone to Andrea, and when he arrived home on a break, she told him she had emotionally had an affair. But the discussion over the matter essentially went nowhere, and appeared to sever their relationship even further. While Phil and Andrea have often disagreed on the actual events that took place, according to Phil in his book Not Dead Yet, he remembers Andrea not wanting to come home one evening, alleging that he believed she was out with Michael. Phil claims he was so angry that evening that he punched a wall and felt betrayed, as he went on to allege in his autobiography that she slept with Michael, despite Andrea strongly denying these claims. In relation to Andrea's affair with Michael Burberry, during an article from the Daily Mail, it was revealed by Burberry's sister, Elsie Marie Kitching, that Michael was a good-looking man who came from a wealthy fashion design family, as she said, quote, Michael is hugely well-read, extremely intelligent, and has an impeccable family pedigree. All this business of him being a lowly painter and decorator is nonsense. In any case, it wasn't some sordid affair. Michael was very much in love with her. Elsa went on to claim that Burberry dropped out of university to attempt to launch a career in the theatre scene, and in the meantime, to earn money, was working for a painting and interior decorating company, with the company's owner being related to Andrea, and therefore landing the job at Phil and Andrea's house. Elsa Marie went on to claim that her brother's account of the affair was that they, quote, were a fatal attraction, and that they fell for one another, as she claimed that Phil perhaps knew about Michael's background, but chose to make him out to be a nobody, and that because of Phil's neglect to his wife, he should have essentially stepped aside to let them be together, but he didn't allow it. Andrea, however, described their relationship as more friendly rather than Burberry's sister's account of things. The neglect that Andrea felt was enough to end things, as she left for her parents' home in Vancouver, Canada, taking the two family pets and their two young children, Jolie and Simon, with her, despite Phil claiming in his autobiography, Not Dead Yet, that he told her to wait 2 more weeks until he's home so they can sort it all out. As he was out on tour, Phil arrived back home during December 1978 at the conclusion of the Then There Was Three tour, only to realise that his family and the pets were all gone. Phil claims he tried everything to save his marriage and make it work, as he told his bandmates over dinner one evening that he would have no choice but to leave the band and go and save his marriage. While they weren't as understanding with Peter Gabriel when he became the first band member to have a child, Tony and Mike were both now married with children themselves and had matured, as they told Phil to go fix his marriage and the band would go on hiatus, and in the meantime, they'll go work on some solo projects before coming back together to continue on as Genesis, essentially telling Phil, don't rush into things about quitting the band, go sort out what you need and then come back. With Mike and Tony giving Phil the green light, in January 1979, Phil immediately took off to Vancouver, Canada, to be with his wife and children, even purchasing a house for them to live in the area. But after just 3 to 4 months, not much changed, and they both realised there was no repairing their fractured relationship, no matter how much, quote, wife-wooing Phil tried. In April 1979, a sad, angry, dejected, and bitter Phil Collins would return home with his tail between his legs to Shelford in Surrey, England, to an empty house, describing the feeling as lonely, and while he'd usually just work on music with his Genesis bandmates to distract him from his home life, Mike and Tony were both still busy with their own solo projects and weren't expecting Phil to return so quickly. So with plenty of time now on his hands all of a sudden, Phil fell into a bit of a depressive slump and found himself regularly attending the local Queen Victoria pub to share a pint with the local punters. He befriended some of them and found it really uplifted his spirits during this difficult time, as he'd share a laugh and vent about his recent marriage breakdown, claiming to have practically lived at the pub during this time. While wallowing in his sorrows at the Queen Victoria, he claims he even befriended fellow musician Eric Clapton, who also happened to be his neighbour. Phil claimed that Eric helped him navigate this difficult time, spending many late nights up drinking with him, as well as Phil's Brand X bandmates, who were a jazz fusion band he joined in 1974 as a side project. As Phil claimed, they were great companions in this difficult time, as he would throw parties to distract himself at his country home in Surrey, and stay up late laughing at reruns of Fawlty Towers with his Brand X bandmates. As Phil told Top 2000 Agogo, quote, "I had no one to answer to. I had a wife and two children and two dogs, and I didn't have anything suddenly. I had a lot of time on my hands. I was angry, I was miserable, I was sad, I was depressed, not having my family around. I was constantly on the phone to her, and the phone kept going down. We argued a lot, as people do, when they go through that kind of thing." On the quiet days where he didn't have his friends to fall back on, he returned home lonesome from the pub to his dull home, without the laughter and greetings from his children, who he sorely missed, as Phil didn't know what to do with himself. One day, he decided to change this and turned his master bedroom into a home recording studio, fitted with everything he needed to record the iconic song, including a 1-inch 8-track recorder, Rhodes piano, Prophet 5 synthesizer, his live acoustic Premiere drum kit, a Roland VP330 vocoder, and of course, a Roland CR78 CompuRhythm drum machine that he had received as a gift after touring Japan. An instrument he once would have turned his nose up to, being a traditional drummer, and had actually given it away at one point, only to ask for it back. Phil, Mike and Tony had all agreed while on tour in Japan to purchase a home studio setup so they could all work on music at home, away from the studio, and then come together to present what each of them had, as this was said to be the way of the future. With no soundproofing, Phil claims you could hear every little noise, from the fridge humming to clocks ticking and the phone ringing during the recording process. It was in this lonesome makeshift studio that Phil started messing around with the drum machine, where he developed the haunting ticking heartbeat loop heard at the beginning of the song, using the Disco 2 and custom bass drum settings, while it was also where he came up with one of the most iconic drum fills of all time, using his live acoustic Premiere drum set, with Phil comparing this drum fill to Barking Seals. A drum beat that at some point everyone can admit to air drumming to over the years, as Phil even claims that it was pure luck and a technical fluke that he just so happened to play that particular drum fill the way he did on that day and recorded it. As Phil claimed, he was using a new talkback microphone in the studio that had a compressor on it to make his voice sound clearer. And as Phil started drumming, the microphone, quote, crushed the sound, creating a massive gated reverb explosion. As Phil loved it so much that he built the entire song around it. With bass, guitar, and even violins being played by studio session musicians, being added later in the mixing sessions to complete the song. With this brilliant drum fill, Phil Collins started freestyling and recording and writing whatever fell out of his mouth, as he went on to tell Top 2000 Agogo that the lyrics were all improvised, and while it was definitely inspired by his marriage breakdown, he doesn't actually know what the song's about entirely, except that he was angry at the time about the situation and wasn't afraid to let his feelings show. Phil elaborated on the song's recording and writing process when he told Mix Magazine, quote, "Face Value was all written over a period of a year and a half, and some songs were written overnight. In the Air Tonight was just a drum machine pattern that I took off that CR78 drum machine. You could eliminate certain sounds and program bass drums and snare drums, so I programmed a bass drum part into it, but basically the rest of it was already on there. I probably added an acoustic Fender piano pretty early. I was coming from Genesis recording and rehearsing History, where sometimes we didn't know what the vocal was going to be doing when we recorded the track, because lyrics were sometimes written after the track was recorded. I remember the first principle I had for making my record was that I would get a voice down very quickly so everything else would fit to the voice. The lyrics you hear for In the Air Tonight, I just sang. I opened my mouth and they came out. I never wrote anything down, and then afterward, I listened to it and wrote them down." With Phil recording a demo tape of this song that of course went on to be titled In the Air Tonight, among others like If Leaving Me Is Easy and I Missed Again, all of course about his marriage breakdown to Andrea during these bedroom studio sessions. With Phil claiming that he never actually intended on anyone other than Andrea hearing them, as he thought he could perhaps send them to her as a message in the form of a song to either win her back or to show her how hurt he was. Instead, Phil ended up showing the demo to his manager Tony Smith, who absolutely loved the sound of these songs, and encouraged Phil that they could turn this into his very own solo album, as he had more than enough quality material. Phil would also show these songs to his Genesis band members and didn't want to hold out on them for their upcoming 10th studio album, titled Duke. Together they would pick just two songs from all of Phil's bedroom studio material, as the three-piece usually shared the writing duties, picking a couple of songs each for their albums. Phil felt incredibly protective over these songs because they were so personal and still wasn't sure if he was going to go through with a solo album, so he presented them anyway, and surprisingly, In the Air Tonight would actually be overlooked. Phil was very proud of the song, but didn't think much of it at the time, with Phil claiming his bandmates thought it was too simple. This was despite Tony later stating that he was never actually shown the song. Instead, Genesis chose Phil's deeply personal song, Please Don't Ask, and Misunderstanding, which funnily enough went on to reach number one in Canada of all places. Please Don't Ask was a heartbreaking song about Phil's marriage ending and includes the line, "'Cause I know the kids are well, yes you're a mother to the world, but I miss my boy, oh I hope he's good as gold." With Phil clearly talking about his children and Andrea, but in particular, his boy Simon. The Duke album would be released in March 1980 and would go on to reach number 1 in the UK and 11 in the US, becoming their biggest success to date and their very first number 1 album. Moving forward, 29-year-old Phil Collins' divorce to Andrea would be finalised during 1980, around the time of the release of Duke, with Phil having regular phone calls and visitations with his children when he could find the time around touring and studio time, with the kids, and in particular Simon, joining Phil on tour throughout much of their childhoods. The situation leading up to their divorce would happen to get messier, however, when Andrea met another man named Charles Eustace, and Phil met an aspiring teacher from LA named Jill Tavelman, who moved to the UK to be with Phil. With Genesis members Tony Banks releasing his solo album A Curious Feeling in 1979, and Mike Rutherford releasing his solo album Small Creeps Day in 1980, both of which had reasonable success in the UK, it was now time for Phil Collins to launch his very own solo career, as he decided to sign a contract with Virgin Records, distancing himself from Genesis label Charisma as he wanted full creative control. Phil headed into the studio from August to December 1980 in both London and LA to mix and overdub the demos he had produced in his Surrey home studio. Along with Hugh Padgham, Phil would also produce the album in what was his first attempt, as his debut album would be titled Face Value. Face Value would be released on the 13th of February 1981, and with the help of smash hits like If Leaving Me Is Easy, I Missed Again, the Jill Tavelman inspired This Must Be Love, and of course In the Air Tonight, the album would be critically acclaimed and rise to number one in Canada, the UK, and Switzerland, two in Australia, and seven in the USA. With an album born out of sadness, heartbreak, and bitterness, selling over 12 million copies around the world, where it went 5 times platinum in the US for selling over 5 million copies. Face Value would go down as the perfect atmospheric divorce album, becoming an all-time classic. The lead single from Face Value would of course be titled In the Air Tonight, and would go down as Phil's most recognisable hit of all time. Released as the debut single in the UK in January 1981, and in May in the US as the second single from the album, the eerie, experimental pop-rock ballad would go on to peak at number one in 4 countries, including Sweden, 2 in 5 countries including Canada and the UK, and number 3 in Australia. Despite selling over 3 million copies and going triple platinum in the US, as well as being a hit on radio, the song only made it to number 19 on the US Hottest 100. However, it did happen to reach number 2 on the US mainstream rock chart and took home an Ivor Novello Award for International Hit of the Year. While In the Air Tonight's music video would also be a regular fixture on MTV during its 1981 launch, with the dark and eerie music video today standing at over 333 million views on YouTube. Not only would the song include a dark, atmospheric and moody intro, and of course the iconic drum fill that kicks in after 3 minutes and 40 seconds into the 5.5 minute long song, but Phil's emotionally charged vocals and witty lyrics accompanied by that haunting melody make for the perfect mix, with Phil claiming the song was written in D minor, the quote, saddest key of them all. As legendary performers like Bob Geldof and Ozzy Osbourne praising the song, with Ozzy stating it was the quote, best ever. Everything from anger, bitterness and sadness would be captured in this song, as Phil wrote the incredibly powerful and emotionally charged lyrics that read, well, if you told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand. I've seen your face before, my friend, but I don't know if you know who I am. Well, I was there and I saw what you did. I saw it with my own 2 eyes. So you can wipe off the grin. I know where you've been. It's all been a pack of lies. Some have speculated that Phil is actually talking about the man that Andrea emotionally cheated on Phil with while he was away on tour. However, it has never been fully confirmed, with Phil simply stating he doesn't know where the lyrics came from, except for the fact that he used drowning as a metaphor to describe his failing marriage. However, the following lyrics do strongly allude to Phil confronting both Andrea and Michael Burberry as he sings the lines, "Well, I remember, don't worry, how could I ever forget? It's the first time, the last time, we ever met. But I know the reason why you keep your silence up. No, you don't fool me. Well, the hurt doesn't show, but the pain still grows. It's no stranger to you and me." Once In the Air Tonight and the Face Value album took off commercially, Phil's now ex-wife Andrea was furious about being included as content for his music and claimed that he was airing their dirty laundry for the whole world to hear and for capital gain. Phil would claim, however, that he actually lost friends over releasing personal material like this, as they were surprised at Phil, who was generally a nice, quiet man, who all of a sudden had all this bitterness and anger built up inside him. As he said, quote, "To me, that's what songwriting is all about." Phil actually jokingly described the song later as being a, quote, "noose around my neck," or, "This song has become a stone around my neck, though I do love it." Claiming while it was a massive hit, he forever gets known as the guy with the drum song and that he can never reuse the drum pattern or machine again, as it's been done and can't be replicated, as people would say he's copying old material, despite people of course asking him why he can't do another song like that, essentially pigeonholing himself. Luckily for Phil, however, he was talented enough to experience commercial success outside of that song. During 1981, Phil would perform In the Air Tonight just once as a solo act during a charity event and wouldn't embark on a world tour despite the success of his debut solo album, as he claimed he wanted to have more material first. Phil would, however, perform the song On Top of the Pops during 1981 and caused quite a stir with his appearance, with an interesting prop situated on top of his drum machine beside him being a paint tin and paintbrush, perhaps alluding to the occupation of Michael Burberry, who Andrea allegedly cheated on him with. Phil would later claim in his autobiography Not Dead Yet that he didn't include this prop on purpose, and that he oddly thought it would make for a nice touch after seeing the items sitting backstage, and that it was being used to paint one of the other props. However, Phil would go on to use the props in future performances of the song over the years. Phil's ex-wife Andrea thought differently, however, telling the Daily Mail that she felt, quote, "sick and betrayed" when she saw it, and, quote, "I knew straight away it was a message to me." Whether it was a petty poke at Andrea's affair or just a coincidental inclusion, I guess we'll never know. Phil would return to Genesis with Mike and Tony as a three-piece, as they continued to have increased success over the coming years, touring extensively throughout 1981 and 1982, with the three band members choosing to keep their solo work separate. However, during Phil's first solo tour, called the Hello I Must Be Going Tour, Phil would play In the Air Tonight at every gig, before famously playing the song at the 1985 Live Aid concert in both Philadelphia and London, utilising time zone differences to fly to perform the song, among others, on both shows on the same calendar day. While touring the US, an urban myth began to form when rumours about an alternate song meaning behind In the Air Tonight began to circulate throughout much of the 80s and 90s. One that Phil, no matter how much explaining he did, he just couldn't shake. Arguably one of the most misunderstood stories in music of all time, the story goes that Phil witnessed someone drowning from a distance, and as he struggled to get there in time to save him, he observed another man standing right next to the water, doing absolutely nothing to help, resulting in the drowning man passing away, and the bystander getting off scot-free. It was then alleged that Phil tracked the willing bystander down through a private investigator, gave them front row tickets to one of his concerts, and during the show, he had a spotlight beam down on them while singing the lyrics to In the Air Tonight that read, "Well, if you told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand." Quite the incredible, well-thought-out story, but sadly, as amazing and elaborate as it is, it's 100% false, according to the man himself, Phil Collins. With Phil telling the BBC, quote, "I don't know what this song is about. When I was writing this, I was going through a divorce, and the only thing I can say about it is that it's obviously in anger. It's the angry side or the bitter side of a separation. So what makes it even more comical is when I hear these stories, which started many years ago, particularly in America, as someone came up to me and said, 'Did you really see someone drowning?' I said, 'No, wrong.' And then every time I go back to America, the story gets Chinese whispers. It gets more and more elaborate. It's so frustrating, because this is one song out of all the songs probably that I've ever written, that I really don't know what it's about." The story would evolve through word of mouth over the years, evolving in the 90s internet age, when chat rooms also began to debate the song's true origin or alleged hidden or secret meaning. While in the year 2000, Eminem's hit song Stan would make reference to In the Air Tonight and the urban legend itself, further pushing the drowning man theory to confirm for some people that it was real. As the lyrics in Stan read, "You know the song by Phil Collins, In the Air of the Night, about that guy who could have saved that other guy from drowning, but didn't? Then Phil saw it all, then at a show he found him." Other theories that circulated involve Phil as a child witnessing the drowning, that someone fell through the ice, or Phil witnessing a man raping a woman, followed by inviting him to a show to confront the man. All of these, once again, however, were 100% false. Phil Collins with Genesis would go on to score four more number one albums in the UK from 1981 to 1991, as they experienced increased success in the US with hits like Mama, I Can't Dance, No Son of Mine, and Invisible Touch, as Genesis went on to etch themselves into the history books as one of the greatest bands out of the 80s. Member of Genesis Tony Banks would experience solo success, even venturing into classical music, while Mike Rutherford would find success with his band Mike and the Mechanics, scoring hits like The Living Years, All I Need Is a Miracle, and Silent Running, as they would all go back and forth over the years between Genesis and their solo careers. Phil Collins, on the other hand, became arguably bigger than the band entirely, building a stellar solo career with multiple US and UK number one albums from 1985 through to the mid-90s, including the likes of But Seriously and No Jacket Required, which spawned brilliant songs like Another Day in Paradise, Easy Lover, Against All Odds, Don't Lose My Number, and You Can't Hurry Love, which came off of his second solo album, titled Hello, I Must Be Going, the same album that also included the song I Don't Care Anymore, which was also written about the drawn-out process of his divorce with Andrea. Throughout the 80s and much of the 90s, Phil remained a member of both Genesis and as a solo artist. However, by 1995, he had grown tired of the band, and while remaining on good terms with Mike and Tony, he decided to officially leave Genesis in 1996, citing that he wanted to focus on his solo career. With Phil's blessing, as he wanted Mike and Tony to continue to have success, Genesis attempted to continue on in 1997 with Scottish frontman Ray Wilson, and despite experiencing some success in the UK, their album tanked in the US, and it just wasn't the same anymore for Mike and Tony without Phil, as the band officially broke up by the year 2000. Phil went on to experience further solo success with yet another number one UK album in 2010, and even took part in two Genesis reunions alongside Tony and Mike. While in relation to his love life, just like his broken marriage to Andrea, Phil would continue to experience difficulties with love, marrying twice more in 1984 to Jill Tavelman, where together they had a daughter named Lily Collins, only for their marriage to also break down, partly due to Phil cheating on Jill with a former drama school classmate named Lavinia Lang on two separate occasions, ironically undoing any form of sympathy from being cheated on himself in his previous marriage. While Phil would have a third marriage in 1999 to Oriane Seavey, a 22-year-old Swiss translator, when Phil was 43 years old. Together they would have two sons named Nicholas and Matthew before divorcing later in 2006 due to some similar circumstances to his first wife, with Phil claiming that the touring schedule was too much for Oriane and that he attempted to follow her and their young kids to Switzerland when she moved, but it didn't work out. They later got back together in 2016, however things fizzled out once again and they split up. The fallout from In the Air Tonight didn't end in the 80s. In fact, in 2016, following the release of Phil's autobiography, Not Dead Yet, Phil's first wife, Andrea Bertarelli, launched legal action against him as she claimed that the book painted her as a homewrecker and a gold digger, arguing that Phil's version of their divorce was a gross misrepresentation of her character. While the outcome of that case was never made public, it proves that even 40 years later, the wounds opened by this song haven't fully healed. With Andrea telling her side of the story to the Daily Mail in 2015, stating, quote, "He'd call constantly, and when I'd answer, instantly start raging, calling me names, telling me to come home. He turned up unexpectedly a couple of times. He didn't realize he was driving me further away." Often seen as the nice guy of pop during the 80s, Andrea's side of the story was much different, telling the Daily Mail at times when they argued that, quote, "the veins would be bulging out of his neck." While Andrea continued on, mentioning the paintbrush props on the top of the pops, stating, quote, "he had to go and stick brushes in pots of paint on the stage to blame me. It was a red herring. It wasn't why I really left him, but he had to make me the bad guy. It's so insulting to reduce the reason the relationship ended to that. But that's Phil. It's always all about him. He's a bit of a narcissist. He absolutely hates criticism. He finds it very easy to blame other people. It's very important to him that people believe his side of the story." Andrea would live out much of her life in privacy, remaining in Canada, where she relocated to Salt Spring Island off the coast of British Columbia, where she would turn to art and photography and sell a successful calendar related to wildlife and the environment, raising over $250,000 in a campaign to preserve and protect the Salt Spring area's environment and wildlife, as well as starting her very own art gallery that she would run for several years. In 2018, she would settle in County Kerry in Ireland, where she runs her very own blog, delving into her life and career. As she would tell The Sun, quote, "I am a private person and have never sought the limelight, even during my marriage to Phil." Phil remains close to all of his children, despite his divorces, with all of his children going on to have successful careers in sport, music, and acting. His sons Simon and Nicholas, both of course to different women, have headed down the musical path, with Nicholas drumming for Genesis when his father became ill, while also drumming for his own band, The Effect. Simon, on the other hand, became a vocalist and drummer for the band Sound of Contact. Phil's daughters to different women, Jolie and Lily, have both become talented actresses, with Jolie starring as a police officer in the drama Cold Squad, and Lily, of course, starring in Netflix's Emily in Paris, and has been touted as an actress on the rise. While finally, his son Matthew has become a professional soccer player who currently plays in Austria. Today, In the Air Tonight isn't just a song, it's a cultural landmark. It has survived the test of time by constantly finding new life. From the haunting reference in Eminem's Stan, to the comedic chaos of The Hangover, to TV crime dramas like Miami Vice, and even that unforgettable drumming gorilla in the Cadbury chocolate advertisements, which saw the song return to the UK charts during 2007 and saw Cadbury sales rise by 9% that year after it was rated the advertisement of the year. The song is used across many sporting codes like the NFL and boxing as music to get both the athletes and fans pumped up. While In the Air Tonight was also ranked number 291 out of 500 as one of the greatest songs of all time by Rolling Stone magazine, as the song no doubt has contributed to Phil entering into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2003. While musicians like Marilyn Manson and Lil' Kim have had moderate success covering the song in recent times, exposing the song to a new fan base and generation. Even as we speak, the song continues to break records and achieve massive milestones. As of this week, it has just eclipsed 1 billion streams on Spotify and joins the most elite club in music history. But as the song's legacy grows, the man behind it faces his toughest battle yet. Phil Collins recently celebrated his 75th birthday, and while he remains the same witty, resilient legend we know and love, his health has taken a heavy toll. After years of spinal injuries, nerve damage, and mobility issues that forced him to perform his final tours from a chair, Phil now requires 24-hour care from a live-in nurse, and he's been open and honest about the frustration he feels over a body that can no longer play the instrument that he not only loves, but made him famous in the first place. Yet despite the physical toll, Phil's spirit remains woven into the very fabric of pop culture through the song In the Air Tonight. Every time that drum fill kicks in, at a wedding, in a car stopped at a red light, or on a movie screen, no matter where, the world stops to eardrum along with him to that epic drum fill. He may have stepped away from the stage, but his legacy lives on through this incredibly vulnerable masterpiece of a song, born from one of his darkest and most challenging moments of his life. And for that, we thank you, Phil Collins. This has been the story of In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins. I'm your host, Adam Hampton, and this is Lyrics of Their Life. And that wraps up this episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast. Thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If this is your first time tuning into our show, don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss our future episodes. And if you're really enjoying the show,
A quick rating or review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts goes a long way in helping us to grow. If you would like to follow the podcast, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, X, and TikTok at Lyrics of Their Life Podcast, or on our website at lyricsoftheirlife.com for updates and more. If you'd like to support the podcast further and help keep episodes like this coming, you can head over to my Patreon at patreon.com/lyricsoftheirlifepodcast, or you can buy me a coffee over at buymeacoffee.com/lyricsoflifepod. Every bit of support means the world to me and helps make episodes like this one possible. Whether you're a long-time listener or just discovering the show for the first time, thank you for being here and supporting the show in whatever form that comes in. Thanks again for listening. I'm your host, Adam Hampton, and this is Lyrics of Their Life.